Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Literary Weapons Podcast. I'm Joshua.
And I'm Liv.
So, this episode is a little thrown together. You're supposed to have a guest host. He's sick. Probably took too much pre-workout and feels like death. I feel like death. And I just don't feel good.
I feel fine. I just drove 5 hours straight today, so...
Yeah, someone's a little sleepy.
Somebody is a little sleepy.
But so we're gonna have a great episode for everybody today. And I think all of our conditions among us three and our ghost guest host. I think it's very applicable to the book we're talking about today.
Oh God.
That you are not gonna want to read. Because this book is not tailored to Miss Liv.
Not to the girly pops.
No, this is really not. Since I know that I don't think you would like it, I'm going to go into spoilers at the end.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go into it. I don't know who I would recommend this for. We'll get into it. So, to start off, what are you drinking today?
Nothing, because we didn't go to the store.
To the store, so you're drinking some H2O.
Some H2O.
And I am drinking an Old Family cough medicine of Noah's Mill bourbon and some honey with a little bit of spiced apple brown sugar in it. It's actually quite nice.
That's great for you.
And it makes me not feel like my throat is like gargling sandpaper.
Okay. Well, That's disgusting.
Yeah. But it makes it to where I can talk without coughing.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, like I said, this is going to be a great episode, everybody. So the book that we're going to talk about today is Essex Dogs by Dan Jones. This is my first foray into historical fiction / drama.
Mm.
I think I will continue trying out books in this genre. I don't know if it'll be more books, because this is a trilogy.
Okay.
Or a planned trilogy. There's a book two. I don't think I'll be continuing. And it's for some very specific reasons.
Okay.
And we can get into it. Our dog Raven is trying to run away. So, just to get into it, for the world and setting, it is set mostly in France in the year 1346.
So, way back when?
Yeah, back in the day. So, this is during the Hundred Years' War between England and France. Bunch of knights and longbowmen.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I don't know, I like it because it's a part of history that I really like.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in. But we'll get into it. But yeah. So it's the kind of going into the characters, like, this is told from the English perspective as they're invading France. Like I said, it's the beginning of the Hundred Years' War. It's a really cool time period. Spoiler alert, with some really cool battles.
No way.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a very interesting time.
Okay.
And so if you're super interested in this time period, that might just be reason enough to read it. So as far as the characters, I think there's a very big split in the characters between real people and the fictional characters.
Yeah.
Because it's basically, the story is told about like a group of 10 soldiers that are all fictional, and it's from their point of view throughout the invasion. And then they meet like real characters, like the Earl of Northampton and the Earl of Warwick and the Black Prince Edward. You know, like, you meet all these real people. The real people are very well written. They're interesting. like, they're just kind of cool to read about.
Okay.
Their personalities are obviously dramatized because, like, we don't know what they're really like.
Yeah, that's kind of... They can make up.
They can make up stuff. But, like, they were so much more interesting than all of the fake characters. Which I feel like in a historical fiction, it's kind of supposed to be the opposite.
Yeah.
Like, the history characters are supposed to be, like, the background. And it's like you have these really cool characters.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's like history's cool.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, every time that there was a chapter without a real person in the history, I was like,
Yeah.
Or like, the little band of fake people would be talking, and I'd just be like, I really don't care about any of this. Like, all of the fake characters are, they're almost written like caricatures. So, like, and there's no character progression in the fake characters.
I don't like that.
Yeah. That's, like, the whole point of putting in fake characters is... Yeah.
Is to create a storyline with those characters.
Uh-huh.
A good storyline is the goal.
That's the thing is, the storyline is determined. We know the storyline. The storyline's good.
Yeah, that's true.
But, like, our point of view to the story wasn't as interesting as I was expecting. But like a couple of the real characters, complete like amazing characters. Like every time their name came up, I was excited. Even if it was just them talking in camp, which is most of the book.
Yeah.
And
then battle.
Yeah, and I'll get into that. That was done on purpose, and I like it for that. But I'll get into that in a minute.
Okay.
But, yeah, like, one of the characters, Earl Northampton, is, like, he's my favorite character in the book. He's very much, like, a, like, rough, like, football coach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just like, come on, boys, let's go fuck them up. Or, like, he'll, like, stab some, like, random Frenchmen and be like, that'll get their cocks hard.
That's neat.
Yeah. He's, like I said, his writing, it's very, like, I don't know, it gets you interested.
Okay.
Like, he is the most interesting part of the book. There's a few other really good characters, and, like I said, they're all the real life people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the king is super interesting because he has a shitty son and he knows he's shitty. And you can kind of see that. Like, he understands, like, ugh, my son is the prince and, like, he's my heir, but, like, he's an asshole. Because, like, his son, all like, the black prince, all he cares about is rape, murder, and pillage.
Okay. Those are choices.
It's like, when he's like,
for sure,
let's go to... He's also 16. So you give a 16-year-old a sword and be like...
And power and authority.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. And so, like, his idea of going to war is, I get to kill a lot of people and no one can say anything to me about it. Even if, I mean, he's a prince. He can murder somebody and get away with it.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, he can murder a lot of people and it's fine. But, like, the king knows that he's a shitty kid and just, like, lets his generals talk shit to him openly. Like, in the war council, the generals would just be like, you're an idiot. And he's like, oh, I am your prince. And then, so, you're still a little idiot.
It's like, again, King Joffrey.
Yeah, he is a King Joffrey.
Yeah.
And his dad is very much a King Robert. So, like, one of the real generals is like a Tyrion Lannister. like, he's the one that'll slap him. He actually does slap the prince a couple times, now that I think about it.
Damn, that's brave.
Yeah. And then there's one... I think the most interesting character, though, is Sir Godfrey. He was a French noble who some weird stuff happened. He ended up becoming a traitor and going to England and helping them invade. And he is notable in history as known as Sir Godfrey the Lame, because when he was born, one leg just didn't grow from when he was a baby.
So I had a little baby leg and a grown-up leg? Hold on.
Like a Deadpool, you know, little baby. Yes.
Hold up. No, Joshua. That's so bad. It's that's something.
Yeah, so Sir Godfrey the Lame, he is such an interesting character because, like, he's walking through his home country helping these Englishmen, like, slaughter the peasants, and he'll just point at something and be like, ah, that is, like, the most, you know, famous monastery in, like, in this county, you know, thousands of years of history and, like, you know, it's a place of love and all this. And then in the middle of him explaining that to the English, the little shitty prince will say, fuck it, let's burn it to the ground.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate when they go after the architecture and the culture.
Yeah.
That's just sad.
I think now that that's considered, like, in...
war crime.
Well, no, it is a war crime, but it's... genocide, like destroying places of culture.
Yeah.
Like identifying pieces of culture in a society.
Uh-huh. And going after those, like, targeted.
Yeah. That I'm pretty sure that's, like, that's one of the seven tenets of genocide or something. It's one of the... something like that.
Right on.
It's sad. So, yeah, characters are interesting. The real characters are interesting. But, like, all the fake characters, there's a small angry guy, a big angry guy, a big nice guy, a small nice guy, two dudes that are, like, hardened killers that don't speak.
Mm-hmm. That's very basic.
And then a drug addict.
Very, yeah. Wow. Okay, yeah.
And then their captain is, like, a hardened veteran who's been, like, a criminal... and he was, like, the nastiest guy ever. And then all of a sudden he decides, I don't think that this is ethical anymore. And that is the extent of the 10... Oh, and there's a crazy priest who's, like, definitely just pure sacrilege. Yeah, that's the fake characters. And they stay that, like, the same way. Like, they're interesting in the first, like, 10 pages. And then once you realize that, like, that's really all it is, it's kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no internal struggle.
I mean, like, really? The main, like, the captain deciding that he doesn't want to do war anymore.
Yeah.
That's, like, his big struggle. But, like, he doesn't resolve it by the end. Like... I don't know. That was just weird. As far as action, don't look at my notes.
I'm sorry.
You're trying to spoil it.
No.
As far as action, it's sparse but hard hitting, much like an actual medieval campaign.
Yes.
So it's a lot of walking and waiting. A lot of searching for food. a lot of people getting dysentery and getting sick, kind of like we are now, or I am.
You are.
And Land is.
And Land.
And so it's like, it's a lot of just impatience and being bored and being hungry, and then all of a sudden it's just horrific violence.
Yeah. What weapons do they have? Do they use?
So, this is where it kind of goes apart from the real life.
Ah.
In this, it's a lot of longbowmen, which the English are famous for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like 100-pound draw longbow, where like it warped. Did you know that it warped their skeletons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read something about that.
Yeah, so this is that time.
Okay.
So, it's a bunch of longbowmen. In this, it's a bunch of men-at-arms that have spears, swords, clubs, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, like, the rabble of mercenaries. And they just kind of have whatever.
Yeah.
In real life, it was, like, 60% longbowmen. And then the rest were men-at-arms, which were spearmen.
Yeah.
And then you had a handful of knights.
Gotcha.
That's what the English army looked like for most of the Hundred Years' War. Mm. But so in this, like, all of them have, like, swords and axes, which doesn't really make sense with the time. But I'm not... I don't know. It's a historical fiction.
Yeah.
Like, I saw a review for this, and someone was like, I give it 1 star because the main characters use swords. And they would have been spearmen in this battalion. It's like, dude, look. It's historical fiction.
Yeah.
Axes
and swords make things more interesting.
Yeah, well, because spearmen aren't that interesting. Yeah. It makes a lot more sense, but...
Stabby, stabby.
One thing I do really like about this, though, is that bows and crossbows seem especially scary and dangerous and, like, powerful.
Yeah.
But, like, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like in most books I read, though, are also fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, it's great and all that you have a bow, but, like, homeboy over here is magic. You know? Like, cool that you have this great bow, but, like, I'm gonna shoot a fireball at you. Or
stop time, rewind, and shoot it back at you.
Yeah, or I'm gonna block your arrow. Like, since these are real people.
Yeah.
If you're just a French peasant and some guy has a bow pointed at you, you're fucked. I don't know, like, the crossbows and everything, it's like they treat them almost like guns now.
Okay.
With, like, how it's described, like, them moving through a village.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're providing, like, they're popping out from cover, providing covering fire while the guys with swords move to a new spot.
Gotcha.
The way it's described is very much like a modern military drama.
Interesting.
And I'll get into that in the kind of vibes, but... Going on to, you know, all of our other normal descriptions, magic. There is no magic.
Ah, what?
Other than the magic of French arrogance. That is in my notes.
That's in your notes. You wrote that out. French arrogance.
Yeah, well, they are arrogant because... In the real battles, the French either had double or triple the amount of troops.
Hmm.
And spoiler alert, the French lose.
Boo.
Because...
Or I don't even know. I don't know who I'm cheering for.
Oh, no, don't cheer for anyone. Yeah. So I'm going to steal a line from A Lion's Led by Donkeys.
Oh, boy.
It's, at this point... Really, throughout history, most of these wars are inbred royalty. Like, it's inbred dudes beefing over turf.
That's...
Stop taking pictures of the cat.
I'm sorry, he's in a cute position.
That was a good line.
Uh-huh. It's a good line.
Inbred dudes beefing over turf. So, like, I'm pretty sure the King of England and the King of France were cousins.
Okay, that's...
Oh. Yeah.
Mm.
So, I don't know. You know, like, it's just because they want to say that they have more land.
Yeah, so let's just kill hundreds and hundreds and thousands of men. Just fuck it. you know.
Yeah, like tens of thousands of men.
Yeah.
In total, hundreds of thousands of people yeah. die across this, like, 2 month span.
Yeah.
Also, the King of England can say that he has more land. And that's, so that's kind of like one of the themes I'll talk about here is like noble slash the knights, you know, it's a very satirical, like the nobility and the knights know best mm-hmm. and like they're better, but it's really, really evident that they're concocting these stories and reasons to go on campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, it's, oh, we have to go invade France because the King of France doesn't have a true reason to be king. Like, he's a fake king. And so our king really deserves to own all of this anyways. So we should go burn, kill, rape, pillage because... this is really our king's land.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and that's the what happened in real life too.
Yeah.
Basically the King of England at the time and the King of France at the time, the old King of France died with no heirs.
Mm.
And so these two princes, like, they kind of had the nobility vote for him to be who would be king. And Philip won the voting, whatever. Turns out, Philip, his claim to the throne was through his mother, who was the daughter of the king.
Mm.
Whereas the King of England was the nephew of the king.
Oh, so he's related through a dude.
Yes. So. And so the English supporters said, since women don't count and women cannot inherit land, like they can't inherit anything from their father.
Yeah.
Because they're not people.
They're not people, yeah.
Yeah, they're not people. Philip can't get the throne because he would be earning it through his mom and she has no right to it because she's a woman.
Yeah.
That was their explanation. And so they told Edward, the King of England, yeah, he's a fake king because he got it through his mom. So really, you're the King of England and you should take over the throne. That's what started all of this.
Daggone.
That's the reason why hundreds of thousands of people died. Is because...
because women aren't real people.
Women aren't real people.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, they, there's a lot of, like, the knights especially justify, like, murder, rape, and pillage, especially, because they say we have the divine right. Like, God...
oh, yeah.
God has given King Edward this rule over France. So, therefore, we can do whatever it takes to get it.
Uh-huh.
So, God is telling us that we need to go commit atrocities to get it.
I love the human species.
Yeah. I don't know. Especially, like, this time in history, it's really bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now in history.
Mm. Women are people now. Look at us.
Kinda.
Yeah, kinda.
Also, the nobles definitely support the dehumanization of other cultures so that their men are more, like, there's no restraint.
More likely to be...
like, violent.
Violent, yeah.
Like, they're, yeah, they're saying, like, these French dogs are, like, they're less than us. Like, they're,
mm-hmm.
they're subhuman. They deserve to die. Like, they're weak. They run away. You should kill them because they're less than us. And it does work. It worked in Nazi Germany. That works.
Yeah.
And so they told them that, you know, these Frenchmen, these French peasants were less than them. And being an English peasant, that's something that you would like to hear. Because, one, you probably have nothing.
Yeah.
Two, you have less than nothing because you live in England. So, yeah, hearing that someone is below you, it's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So, one of the quotes I think really that stood out to me on that kind of whole topic is, "We came here to kill, period, and to take back what is rightfully our king's land."
Oh, yeah. And the king.
Yeah. They just wanted to kill people.
I think people just enjoyed violence to an extent.
We still enjoy violence now.
I know. But
humans like violence.
Yeah. I like cuddling my cat.
Mm-hmm.
And taking funny pictures of him.
Yeah.
Why can't people enjoy that back then? Did they not have cats?
They had cats.
Okay. Then why were they killing people if they had cats? That's just, it doesn't add up, you know?
So, I know why the peasants would kill people. Because if you're starving, and they say, if you come kill people with us, we'll give you food and give you money.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah. So, like, even if you're not, like, a psychopath, you know.
A job's a job.
Yeah, you know, you get VA benefits or whatever back in the day.
Yeah.
Instead of college.
Is there like a pension account? And you know?
It's an extra loaf of bread.
Social security.
USA.
Do you get health insurance? I mean, come on, guys. It's probably not even on paper anywhere.
Probably not. It's just like the Earl saying, yeah, dude, I'll definitely
give you. Yeah, for sure, bro. Come on. Here's a piece of bread, buddy. Come on.
I'll give you one Olive Garden breadstick a month. Go kill some bitches. So, anyways, each chapter starts with the impression that. Like, the chapter starts with what was left in the historical record about what will go on in that chapter.
Okay. That's cool.
So, like,
it's... Like, the Mistborn, like, it's, like,
yes.
Before it? Okay.
So, it'll give a quotation of a first-hand historical document.
Fun.
So, it'll be something that made it into the historical record. But then the chapter is what it looked like to the men, not the generals. It's like, you know, because history's written by the generals or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's their perspective. And then it goes to what the men experienced. Mm-hmm. I liked that part.
That is cool.
So we'll go into the vibes now. And this is kind of the meat of it.
Meat and potatoes.
The meat and taters. I'm going to save my number one for the end. What?
Binky is licking me and it's kind of tickling me, but I don't want him to stop because he's not biting me.
Mm-hmm. He'll start.
He will.
I
was making a face.
One of the, like, the interesting things I think you see in this, I think it's still true today in a different sense, and I'll explain that, is the idle thoughts and drunk theories of royalty becomes orders and, like, necessary miracles by the ground level soldiers. So, like, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, history is made by just normal men and women, but
yeah, it's... Yeah, because women are people, yeah. Too.
Now
they are.
But even though the history is made by normal people, it's told by the royalty and the generals.
Yeah.
And then also, kind of on that same note, propaganda finds its way into the historical record.
Oh, yeah.
So, a lot of... Especially, like, the little beginning pieces of the chapters.
Mm-hmm.
These are, like, very egotistical, like, nobles trying to boast.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in one chapter, the beginning thing is, we sullied across the river with a handful of archers, and we killed at least 1,000 men. In the chapter, they did go across the river, and they killed about 100 dudes. But the general or the noble said, ah, write a letter that says we killed 1,000 of them. It'll make me look better. I don't know. I think and a lot of that stuff probably did happen.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it.
No. But, so, I think the whole, like, the idle thoughts of people in charge turn into orders still happens today. I see it at work where, like, the big boss will just be like, oh, you know, what do y'all think about this? And then all of a sudden, like, we have to figure out how to do that. And it's like, that's not possible. But because some dude with a Rolex and is in charge thinks it's a cool, fun idea. Uh-huh. Like,
and got their engineering degree like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, you don't need to figure this out. It's like,
sir.
What? And yeah, I just think that's interesting. One thing that has nothing to do with anything else, I didn't know where else to put it. I just think it's kind of cool. The fake group of people have a little war cry that they say.
That's sick.
And it's Desperata Pharaoh, which is awake iron in Latin. And they heard it in a bar and they just thought it sounded cool.
That's cute. That's a little, that's a cute thing. Like a cute little dude thing. Dude bros. Bromance.
Cute little dude thing?
Yeah.
Speaking of cute little dude thing, medieval warfare is basically just organized pillaging.
Yeah.
And what?
What time period is The King, the movie with Robert Pattinson in?
So that is during the same war.
Okay.
It's 50 years later.
Okay. So that kind of vibe, though.
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so. Like,
okay, that's what I'm picturing this whole time is the battle scene from The King.
They're very similar.
Okay.
Very similar. It's also so part of that is the like over like you know the course of 300 years around this time, from like 1000 AD to like 1500. We didn't progress that much as a species.
Because we're stagnant there.
Well, we were too busy doing all this stuff to each other.
Too busy killing each other, yeah.
Yeah, this is very similar to the King movie on Netflix, which is the Battle of Agincourt.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the King one time.
Yeah, I really want to talk about the King.
It's an awesome movie.
I don't know, if you're interested in that kind of like time period, Lions Led by Donkeys has a couple of great episodes on that. They actually have an episode on this battle.
Oh, really?
Like all the stuff that all this is moving towards, which I'm going to get into, pissed me off more than anything else. but they also have an episode on the Battle of Agincourt. So as far as like the historical stuff, this time, like this like couple month span,
mm-hmm.
is super notable in history for one reason. The amount of pillaging, burning, and killing is notable to people in the 1300s. So you gotta think like how, like this is, you know, you go, you burn a person's village down, kill everybody. That's, like, pretty normal.
Like, damn, that sucks.
Yeah, it's pretty normal. But, like, this two-month span, the English army was so brutal that even people in the 1300s were like, holy crap.
Like, you guys need to calm down.
Yeah. In the 1300s.
Wow.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. They're like, these people are fine with chopping peasants in half.
Just on occasion.
Yeah. But like, the English army did a thing. So I had to look this up. Because it's mentioned like one time in the book. So this is a historical term. It's a chevauché.
Chevauché?
Chevauché. It's French for to ride, which it sounds like fun, you know? Let's do a chevauché to ride.
That sounds like a ballet move.
Yeah, or like a super...
chevauché.
Like if, you know, like if you're an aristocrat, being like, oh, let's go...
Like promenade. It kind of gives the same vibe.
Very much so. This is a completely different meaning. The word chevauché is a common practice during the Hundred Years' War. It was an armed raid in enemy territory with the aim of destruction, pillage, and demoralization.
Okay.
Chevauchés were generally conducted against civilian populations. AKA, it is just organized war crime.
Yeah. Damn.
So, the like this campaign, the entire campaign was a chevauché, and it ends in a big battle. But to get to the big battle, they just burned every village from Normandy to Crécy. And every civilian that came across their path was killed. Or raped, then killed.
Jeez.
Yeah. Like, it's horrible. If it's horrible for people in the 1300s...
Yeah.
Like, that would be, like, apocalyptic today. But, so, the big vibe, and I think this... So, the first, I don't know, like, 50 pages of the book are, in my view, my favorite part.
Okay.
And it's for one reason. There is a medieval version of D-Day.
Oh, really?
So, and this happened in real life, too. When the English invaded, they landed on Normandy Beach. Pretty much on Omaha Beach.
Huh.
So, it's kind of cool. So I've been to Omaha Beach, actually.
little traveler.
Yeah. And so, when they were, like, when it was being described, the French, and I don't know how true this is to history, but it would make sense. The French had set up crossbow emplacements and catapults.
Yeah.
On the same cliffs and in the same points that the Germans set up machine gun nests.
Whoa.
So, in theory, you know, like when the Americans were landing at Omaha Beach, the places that they were getting shot at from, you know, 700 years before.
The same exact thing happened.
Yes.
That's kind of cool.
If you,
I mean, tragic, but interesting.
Yeah. So, and the thing is, so like, the book opens with these Englishmen on rowboats rowing towards the beach as crossbows and catapults are just getting launched at them.
Taking people out.
It is legitimately Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, no.
Where, like, it even opens with, like, a guy throwing up over the boat.
Ugh.
And then a catapult replacing artillery, but it's just... And then dudes jumping off and drowning because they're armor. And then, you know...
Oh, I didn't even think about that. How?
Yeah.
Whew.
I mean, you have, like, 100 pounds of armor on. It's steel.
Yeah. I mean, I think I could totally do that. I mean, I swam in a pool for, like, 20 minutes one time with a brick above my head.
You're just built different.
Just to prove my dad that I could.
Double your body weight in steel, and you're just swimming along.
Ah! Yeah, no, I would die. Or I would make friends with a really friendly sea animal and hopefully find shore. That sounds like a Disney princess movie.
On D-Day. On D-Day. Swimming with the dolphins.
Yeah.
As an MG-42 is just melting your friends.
Hey, bro, y'all got a channel somewhere near here that you can show me to?
That's going to be your Disney princess movie?
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah.
Is the Dolphins of D-Day?
Josh! We need to cut that out. Okay. And moving on.
So yeah, it's basically like D-Day, Normandy landing, if you swap out machine guns for crossbows. Cool. Yeah, so that's really cool. That's the end of my vibes stuff. We're just gonna get on to ratings. So I'm gonna give this one thumb up.
Okay.
And I want to go further into that. I'd say the first half was two thumbs up, easy.
Okay.
The second half was a meh. Maybe a one thumb up.
So it kind of balances out to one.
The last 50 pages was one thumbs down. Maybe one and a half thumbs down.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you still recommending it as a read? Are we saying avoid it?
So I would say I would recommend it with one spoiler, but it will save you from being disappointed.
Okay.
So all of this is leading towards one big battle.
Yeah.
It's a very famous battle in history called the Battle of Crécy.
Uh-huh.
Where like less than 10,000 Englishmen killed like 40,000 Frenchmen. It's a very famous battle. A lot of cool stuff happened in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10 pages long.
That's it?
Mm-hmm. It's a 400 page book.
That's upsetting.
You know what happens? The POV that you're reading from during the battle gets knocked out in the opening stages, and then wakes up at the end.
It's like a fade to black, like...
Yes!
And then they kiss softly, and then they woke up in the bed next to each other in the morning.
Yes!
But for battle.
The whole book was leading to this battle. It is one of the most famous battles in the Hundred Years' War. And they say, he got knocked on the head.
You got a little boo-boo.
A little boo-boo. Here's 400 pages of camping in the woods, getting dysentery. The most famous thing to happen for the next 50 years. 10 pages.
Yeah. Maybe it's not about the battle. Maybe it's about the dysentery.
And, you know, that may be his point, Dan Jones, the author, is that most of like the experience of a soldier was a lot of walking, waiting, camping.
And pooping.
Yes. I get it. Okay, I understand. I got the point. But it's a 400 page book.
Yeah.
If 300 out of the 400 pages are that, I would rather you make it a 500 page book and include the Battle of Crécy. I still get the point that most of the book is that. Is the waiting.
Yeah.
It still makes an impact.
Mm-hmm.
But it's frustrating to make it all the way through it to at the end. Like, I was legitimately... So I got to the last 20 pages... And I was like, man, they're getting ready for battle. Like, this is awesome. And as soon as the battle started, I was like, man, the book feels really thin on the right side. I looked and I was like, there's legitimately 10 pages left, including an epilogue that had nothing to do with it.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear.
So, to give you just one story out of why this battle was super interesting, the French had a king with them, King of Bohemia, who was blind. He was a tournament knight who was blind. During the battle, he charged his horse at the Englishmen. He had his squires rope his horse to theirs, and they all charged at the Englishmen.
And he just said, "Watch out! Watch out! Watch out!"
Well, he died, so we don't really know.
Okay.
He was probably shot by some, like, teenager from London.
Oh, God. Okay.
But...
yeah, that would have been fun to include, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, during the... this is a spoiler, but we're done with the real review. This is the only spoiler. The king sees that his son is being overran and says, "Ah, let him earn his spurs."
Jesus.
Because he has the option to send in reinforcements. He says, "Now he needs to be a man."
Yeah.
And that, that happened in real life.
Just a little fatherly advice here, mm-hmm. You know. It doesn't matter that thousands of people are going to die, you know, just for me to teach my kid a lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I love that for him. That's so great.
But that happened in real life, too. So I can't really say it's a spoiler.
Yeah.
It happened in 1300, guys.
Yeah. If catch you up. Haven't seen it already, you're a little behind. No. Yeah, I don't think I would read it because war is not my thing. Fairy wars now.
Uh-huh.
Those are magical wars. I can get into that. But, like, actual wars, I don't know. It's just not my cup of tea. But it seems cool. Like, somebody's definitely going to like it.
Yeah, it's made for somebody. But, and it was made for me up until legitimately the last 50 pages. Also, so since we're still in the spoiler section, the whole first half of the book is about, like, you don't know what's going on with the king and all that. That's not the point of the book. It's what are these normal guys doing?
Yeah.
At the halfway point, it changes and you get split to two POVs where one of them is with the king and the prince. So it's half about the men, half about the, like, royalty making decisions.
Yeah.
And it seems like it kind of spoils the first half where, like, you know, it makes it seem like that's not what this story is for.
Yeah.
Like, it's, this isn't about, like, what did the king do or, like, how did he plan the battle? It was about how some random guy is surviving it.
Mm.
I think the first half was more interesting because of that.
Okay.
And then the second half, you spend half the time with the king and the prince and the generals. And, I don't know. I feel like it kind of lost its way. Mm. Which is disappointing. Because the first half was really good.
Mm.
Like I said, I would give the first half of the book a 2 thumbs up. Easy.
Okay.
But, yeah. So, yeah, that is Essex Dogs. I will probably not be continuing on. Back to fantasy.
Back to fantasy.
But I don't know. I might do another historical fiction.
Yeah. Well, I won't be here next week. It'll be Land.
If he actually makes it this
time. If he doesn't drink too much pre-workout.
Yeah. Or his heart explodes.
Or his heart explodes. You know.
Just normal things.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's goofy.
This has been a good one.
This has been fun.
Thank you for filling in.
Very sober.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank y'all for listening. Have a good one.
Bye.